And this is the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast that talks about canceled television shows in the horror industry. And I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And joining us in the studio for the first episode of Constantine, as we begin this 13-episode trek through the canceled NBC TV series from 2015, from the Deadites band, the Trick or Treat radio star, Michael Ravenshadow.
Bambaleo, Dr. Chris, and how you doing, mistress?
I'm
very excited. Very excited to talk about JC.
You can catch the Trick or Treat radio on Wednesday nights on
iTunes, Stitcher Radio. We do a live show on YouTube. Check out the Deadites TV. And then we drop on Fridays on all the devices. Like I said, Stitcher, iTunes. There are three guarantees in life: death, taxes, and Trick or Treat radio every Friday morning.
Fantastic. Thank you, Michael. The Mr. Zeneca has the synopsis for this episode, the first episode of Constantine.
The episode is called Non-Est Asylum, which was originally aired October 24th, 2014. John Constantine, an unscrupulous exorcist and master of the dark arts, recovers in a mental institution following a failed exorcism, which resulted in his soul being damned. He receives a supernatural warning about Liv Aberdeen, who is threatened by mysterious forces. Constantine gives her a pendant that belongs to her father, allowing her to see trapped souls. He introduces her to scrying, a mystic art that predicts where demonic activity will occur. Constantine finds out that Aberdeen is being stalked by the demon Furcifer. Constantine coerces help from Richie Simpson, a hacker who assisted in the failed exorcism. Together, they trap Furcifer and send him back to hell. Simpson convinces Aberdeen to stay away from Constantine. She leaves him the pendant and a map used in the art. He accepts an offer to work for an angel named Manny in exchange for his redemption. Elsewhere, a female artist draws paintings of Constantine.
Dun, dun, dun. And Constantine, of course, is played by the amazing Paul Ryan, who is fantastic in this role, much better than that movie which shall not be named. And he was absolutely perfect for this character in the Arrowverse, because this is part of the Arrowverse, which consists of Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, and starting next year, Black Lightning.
Nice.
The episode opens up with John in a state hospital performing electroshock therapy done to him, and he's seeing his psychiatrist. And as Mr. Zeneca said in the IMDb synopsis, he needs to have new cards made under the Master of the Dark Arts removed from it.
he mentions himself as being a dabbler more of the dark arts. He should get his business cards changed.
Yes, yes.
It is notable, though, that he says in this episode that he was there voluntarily, where that is completely not the case in the comics.
Absolutely. You both have read the comic books a little bit more than I have. I'm a novice to the comic books. I've read Original Sin and one other trade paperback, the one where he gets cancer. And then
Dangerous Habits,
yeah. So, but you guys, both of you, have read all the Hellblazer.
I have not read all of them. I do have quite a lot of them, and I'm running through them, you know, book by book.
Gotcha.
But not all of them.
Michael?
Yeah, no, John for the longest time, I mean, I've been reading comics for 30 years, and he was one
of
those
characters. You don't look that old.
thank you. but he was one of those characters I always knew about, right? And then I remember in issue of Green Lantern, after Hal Jordan as Parallax died sacrificing the Earth during the final night, Kyle Rayner had a funeral for Hal Jordan. All the heroes were there, and so was Swamp Thing. And at one point, Kyle's meeting and greeting, and all of a sudden, John Constantine walks out of like the banquet hall, and Swamp Thing's like, you know, John Constantine, why are you here? He's like, oh, I just came for the food, and walks off panel. And from that panel, I'm like, I got to check this out. So I dove into Dangerous Habits and then really got into the Garth Ennis, Steve Dillon run of the character.
Which I think is where most people really hooked into it.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's had, what, Alan Moore? He's all right. Neil Gaiman, Brian Azzarello, I mean, the list, Paul Jenkins, the creator. So I've dabbled in, I don't know how many I have, but like I said, I've been reading JC for about 20 years.
I actually posted on our Facebook group, if anyone wants to take a look at our Facebook page, a picture of all the trade paperbacks that I have sitting on my shelf. So I'll be reading all of them as we go through this this show, and I'm really excited. Constantine himself, the character design was designed really to represent Sting, like the look of Sting.
Yeah.
Because they wanted that magician that was very young and youthful instead of these, you know, old gray-haired guys that, you know, comic books had been drawing since, you know, beginning of them. And so they wanted someone young. And one thing that I notice as I'm going through these is that John Constantine actually does age in the comic books.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and that's kind of a concept that is a little bit unheard of for me, because most of the comic books that I read are kind of timeless. The characters don't really age. They are perpetually the same age as they go through, even though there's, you know, 20 years of comics. So having a character really age and have such a social commentary at the stages of life that he gets into is really interesting to read.
My favorite comic of all time is the issue of Hellblazer where it's John's 40th birthday party. And, you know, he has a background. He was in a punk band in the 70s and 80s. Splattered Membrane, I believe, is what it was called. And there's even an issue that like listed some lyrics. But, no, John turns 40, and he does age. And I highly recommend that issue because it involves Swamp Thing, Zatanna, and let's just say Swamp Thing uses his powers to make the largest joint ever seen. And Zatanna is like smoking dope, and she's doing spells backwards, floating in John's kitchen. It's excellent.
Now, you were right about that, Mr. Zeneca, that Constantine did age normally in the Vertigo universe, but then in In 2010, there was a huge story arc called The Blackest Night, which led into The Brightest Day. And at the end of The Brightest Day, they revealed that the carrier of the White Lantern of Life was the Guardian of the Green himself, Swamp Thing. And in this storyline, they also undid all of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing continuity by making Alec Holland Swamp Thing again, not Swamp Thing believing it was Alec Holland, which is what Alan Moore had basically written many years ago. And then there was a 3-issue series called The Search for Swamp Thing where John Constantine appears in the, other than that funeral issue, this is the first time we've had Constantine in a major interacting story with like Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman as they're trying to hunt down Swamp Thing. And then we had the launch of the New 52 because of the events of Flashpoint, where the Flash tries to save his mom's life, and it's just a whole complicated mess where all the universes merge together.
And to make a long story short,
too late!
Then he was in the Justice League Dark, which makes him part of the main continuity now, and that's been going on for the last, like, 7 years, so I don't know if he's still, like, aging normally or not, or he's aging in, like, normal, like, DC Comics continuity, because now he's running around in his own book, Constantine, as part of DC's rebirth.
Yeah, it's almost like he reverted in age a little bit just to keep him young and relevant.
Absolutely.
And as far as I am aware, he is not aging at the speed that he was in the comics from like 1988 through, you know, what was it, 2010
is when Hellblazer was canceled because, again, they were launching the New 52 and they merged the Vertigo universe. They merged the Vertigo characters into the Vertigo, into the regular they merged the Vertigo characters into the New 52 with characters like Constantine, Swamp Thing, Animal Man, Death, Sandman as well. And then they had like a Sandman like miniseries written by Neil Gaiman, which I don't know if that affects anything in New 52 or not.
To my knowledge, it shouldn't. I mean, keep in mind too. Vertigo spun out from, if you remember, Chris, the old For Mature Readers headline, you know, which Green Arrow had for a while.
Yeah.
Under Alan Grant, I believe.
Now, was Hellblazer the first official title to carry the Vertigo?
They all bumped under Karen Berger's tenure, so, I mean, they were under the Mature Readers. And at that time, too, Animal Man had his book that was starting to get really weird from Grant Morrison's perspective, but he was also in Justice League Europe. So while this is a Vertigo universe, as I understood it, like with your Jesse Custer, your Transmetropolitan, but I always took it as a fan that Swamp Thing, you know, John and Buddy, while they carried the Vertigo title, they were just and they just didn't hang out all the time. You know, John's London, in my mind, still took place in Clark Kent's, you know, world, just the dark side of it, as a fan's perspective.
Yeah, just like, I mean, there was before the launch, I don't know if this was because we were getting the new 52 was going to be launching within months, but leading up to that, over in Action Comics, Lex Luthor is kills himself to get a black ring and meets Sandman's sister Death.
Yeah,
and that was like a huge like, oh, look at that! Death is in Action Comics meeting with Lex Luthor.
Oh, which you remember too in Grant Morrison's Justice League America run, Daniel showed up, who was the successor to Morpheus.
Yes, and there that also fueled the rumors that in before the Crisis on Infinite Earths in back in the mid '80s.
Yes.
They canceled Wonder Woman's title to relaunch her under the George Perez, like what we well more know as the more concrete origin of Wonder Woman. I mean, it's been changed a lot lately. But at the end of that, the Silver Age Wonder Woman had a baby with Steve Trevor. They had been married and they had a child together, and the baby's name was Daniel. And that fueled rumors that possibly Daniel, the new Sandman, was Wonder Woman Steve Trevor's son from pre-Crisis Silver Age.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was a Wizard magazine's article that had been brought up saying that, you know, it could possibly be the son of Steve Trevor and Wonder Woman.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. DC never confirmed nor denied it, but I do have that issue with Grant Morrison's Just JLA, where it's like Star-Lord the Conqueror is on Earth and everyone's asleep. So, and that was also something they were going to do over in Justice League the Animated Series, which I'm assuming you watched.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Zeneca, did you ever watch that?
I did not, no.
They had a character that has John Constantine has fought and both Sandman has fought, Dr. Destiny.
Oh, yeah,
the Justice League were asleep, and Destiny came in there with, like, skull-like mask and everything. And they were going to actually have Swamp Thing show up to help the Justice League fight Destiny, but at the last minute, he was scrapped on the script due to just they didn't know how to do it correctly, they think, or I don't know the exact, I mean, reasons why. Unfortunately, Dwayne McDuffie, who was the showrunner, passed away, so he probably took it to his grave with him.
Right.
But, you know, there were reasons why they didn't want Sandman in that episode to help the Justice League fight Dr. Destiny. So that would have been awesome. I mean, God, we have Justice League Action out right now, and Constantine shows up on Justice League Action.
That's crazy.
As a recurring character. Played by Paul Ryan, by the way.
Did that start?
Justice League Action?
Yeah.
Yeah, Justice League Action's the entire first season's over.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I don't get out much.
They're 15-minute episodes.
Oh, okay,
fair. And the showrunner and one of the writers is a former guest of the show, Paul Dini.
Oh, dope, really?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, and
he has no idea how to write superheroes, huh?
No, yeah, he has no idea. So, Mr. Zeneca and I both saw on John's business card this phone number before we jump back into the synopsis of the episode, which you can call yourself. 404-248-7182, and I will put it on speaker for everyone to hear what happens when you call this number on John's business card. All right, here we go. Oops. I'm dialing the wrong number. I'm like, wait a minute. This should be picking up right away.
Hello, this is Swamp Thing.
Okay, hold on. Okay, 7182. Okay, 404. All right, see, I've still got the wrong number to type in. All right, hold on. I got this.
404-248-7182.
Okay, all right. Second attempt at this.
555.
Hi, this is John Constantine. If you feel you've reached this message in error, then sod off, you lucky bastard. The rest of you, don't leave a number. Unlock the door. Cheers.
Oh! Leave a
I wonder how many people. I wonder if the Warner Brothers ever let people leave messages before that line they set up got filled up with bullshit.
I was going to scream. I need salt.
All right, so we go back to the asylum where John Constantine is walking down the halls and sees the crazy possessed girl, and he's just like, nope, this is not my problem. I'm going to just continue walking. Not going to deal with this. Oh, I have to deal with this.
Yeah, he can't ignore the possessed girl. He has too big of a drive to help. And
he's
know,
just a big old softy.
Cockroaches, just disgusting, you know. But the demon is possessing her, and it's definitely sending him a message. So there's this huge action scene with the possessed girl being tossed around like a rag doll. A really good, very well done scene. And it's just basically a message, live, die. Meaning that it's a message that he has to contact Liv Aberdeen, the daughter of former associate.
Yes, which, by the way, not really so much a spoiler, but the actress who plays Liv in this episode was supposed to be a recurring character on the show, but at the last minute she needed out of her contract because I think it was conflicting with a film that she was unfortunately too tied to, or she got pregnant and she couldn't continue on the show. I don't remember exactly what, but it was like on the news when it happened, and they had to do a major like complete rewrite for the entire show because they had only filmed the pilot, but they had to scrap like a bunch of like recurring plot lines involving her, because they really do set up her and John's character as being like, sorry, her father's character and John being like in like old buddies, like him and Chaz.
Yeah, and how he introduces her to the world that's beyond her gaze is a little bit like how the character John Constantine does it in the Books of Magic, which is actually pretty interesting to see. You know, having, you know, just by her holding the amulet, which is given to her a little later in the episode, it focuses her attention and her energy, and therefore she's able to see the lost spirits. It's a, you know, quite interesting visuals, and I think it's very complimentary to how John Constantine did it in the Books of Magic.
Mm-hmm. And the angel that appears to John, there's what I thought was really funny about this episode. There's the character Richie we'll get to eventually, but the angel who appears to John, both him and Richie, the actors, have been on Lost.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he's great.
Yeah. That was Walt's father on Lost, who the angel in this episode, and then of course Richie was one of the Dharma people that come to the island to find out what's going on in the third season of Lost.
And he was the guy that was also in Oz, right?
I never watched Oz.
If you love comedies, you'll enjoy it.
Oz, the prison show.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Right. what is that actor's name? It's
Harold Perrineau.
Yes. Perrineau, yes, that's right. Also on Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
He's great in everything. And then Liz is introduced to Chaz Chandler, who is one of the longtime recurring characters of John Constantine, as played by Charles Halford. Now, I don't know if this character has carried over into the current Rebirth or New 52.
I'm not sure. What's great about Chaz is that he's the only one of John's friends that stays alive.
Correct.
Like, and he's great. I love their dynamic back and forth.
Yeah. What's that one shot that came out? You guys might. I read it one time, but I can't remember the name of it. But it's a self-contained one-shot Constantine Hellblazer story where Chaz needs John's help to save their daughter. And, of course, Chaz's ex-wife is like, you bastard, you brought this son of a bitch into our lives again.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't need him. What's the name of that?
Was it called like Chaz's Tale or Chaz? I thought it had his name in the title.
Chaz the Knowledge, I think it is.
Is that the one shot?
I'm not sure.
Oh, man, what is the name of that? It's not in any of your pictures either that you posted, Mr. Zeneca.
No.
But it's not like part of like, you know, it's not like six issues into one. It was, again, it was a self-contained graphic novel set in Constantine's thing. I think it was written by Alan Moore. Well, if you know what it is, you can leave it in the comment section of this video on RadioHorror.com or on iTunes. Please let us know, because it's scrapping both of our brains.
Chaz is actually in the Hellblazer Rebirth, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he does return. And since he has that miraculous survival skill that you see in this episode...
Yeah.
You know, and I think we find out later in the series as to why he has that miraculous surviving skill.
Yes, considering how impaled he gets.
Yeah, he gets impaled by a electrical wire, very thick electrical wire, a non-survivable injury, completely non-survivable. But because Chaz himself had a spell put on him, and so he has 47 souls tied to his body and his soul. So whenever he dies, he uses one of them and basically regenerates.
Now,
depending on Depending on the severity of the injury, that's how long it'll take him to recover.
Now, this little hut that that Constantine and the girl go to, is this ever named? Do we see it again later on in the show? I don't really remember. I know you guys have only watched like the first couple of episodes, yeah. But I don't remember seeing it again. Other than like one of the biggest things that everyone was hoping was going to come on the show was the girl picks up the Helmet of Fate.
Right. Yeah.
That was a great callback.
Which I'm hoping, because this all of the rights and stuff like that to Constantine have been brought back over into the CW universe, since they're allowed to use him. Which, by the way, according to the newest issue of Horror Hound came out, issue 64, with the three different hosts of MST3K on the cover, there is a tiny little snippet article about John Constantine saying, "Sadly, it looks like CW will not be hosting a Constantine pickup as originally thought, but it was revealed that Matt Ryan will return to voice the character in a limited animated series set to air on CW Seed in 2018. So, but that doesn't still say that whether or not Matt could show up on DC's Legends of Tomorrow Dr. Fate or Deadman or Swamp Thing.
Which they've already established the JSA in this season on Legends of Tomorrow.
Correct.
So
yes, and Dr. Fate's a member of the JSA.
Correct.
So maybe they need to go get the Helmet of Fate, and they're like, who has it? John Constantine. They're all like, you know, yeah, maybe they're like reactions.
Oh, I'm gonna deal with that guy.
You know, yeah, like seriously, because even Oliver was, you know, kind of very reluctant to call John, but he knew he needed John's help to reinsole Sarah, which is the episode we'll get to in a few weeks. So, Mr. Zeneca, what happens after they leave the house of mystical artifacts?
Well, this is like at the house, John teaches Liv how to scry, you know, using the amulet. But then afterwards, let's see, they go to – lost place in my notes. They're in Atlanta.
They encounter the ghost train, and it's very reminiscent of like Winston in Ghostbusters 2. The ghost she wants to run away. John grabs her, and like the ghost train passes right through him as she is freaked out.
Yeah.
And then that reminded me again of Winston's reaction in Ghostbusters 2. But this is where we also find out about Astrid, John's – the girl that John supposedly sacrificed, or a soul that she let go to hell, is that possibly John's daughter?
If memory serves, it was his sister, right?
But this is like a little girl. This is a little African-American girl on the show.
I could Mistress, going back from the books, that's a big thing from back in the day. I thought it was his sister. They could have changed it for continuity.
I think they definitely want to change it, because they don't. Not because they're different races, but they just don't – you know what I mean? She's so small.
Yeah.
I don't think it could possibly be his daughter – I mean his sister. I'm thinking more like – does John have any children in the comics?
Not in the books. He had a brother that
– Seriously, all the women that John sleeps with, he's never
– Well, fair. I believe if legend has it, when his mother died at childbirth and he ended up strangling his brother in the womb with the umbilical cord.
Yes.
Which caused his dad to have some resentment. I think early on. But,
yeah, it's actually mentioned in this episode that his father calls him a killer, and every night would punch him in the back of the head, and like, that's what you get for what you did to your mother, you killer.
Mm.
So this you know, pilot episode, like the storytellers have to do a lot of work, because you're going from an audience that knows nothing and having to set the rules of the universe. Who John Constantine is as a character and as a person, and have a lot of exposition and backstory. So
they cram a lot into the first episode.
Yeah. Oh, they do. It's massively packed, and you can actually watch it over and over again and still miss a few little tiny details.
Yeah.
Because he speaks fast. He uses the appropriate British colloquialisms. And,
it helps that Paul's British himself.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul, Matt Ryan is British himself. Every time I say Matt Ryan, I think of dearly departed artist Paul Ryan.
Yeah, and me too. I'm like, wait a minute. And I'm like, wait, okay. But yeah, Matt Ryan. Both are awesome.
Yes.
So they have to set the ground stage for exactly what the audience is going to be looking at. And what, you know, they have to differentiate with how Supernatural is portrayed, because I'm sure a lot of the people who watch Supernatural would also be fans of this Constantine show, even if they haven't read any of the comic books.
Yeah.
So you have to set the stage. So they do a lot of, you know, flashbacks and exposition and talking about past histories and allusions to things. And, you know, especially when he's talking to his associate, Richie Simpson, they're telling about what already happened. Now, the taking of Astra to hell and his subsequent asylum committal was actually a very big thing. So to really begin the series with that as an exposition was, I don't know, it's strange, but it also just thrusts you into the character.
Before we get much further into the episode itself, we wouldn't have John Constantine without Swamp Thing. And the day we're recording this episode, by the way, on March 19th, and the day it will air, which will be March 22nd, March 19th, we lost a legend in comic books who was responsible for one of the reasons why we have John Constantine. Bernie Wrightson passed away today. He had been sick for a while, and according to my friend Pete at That's Entertainment, where both me and Michael are frequent partakers of comic books in, he had lapsed into a coma about a week ago. And when I met him at the Boston Comic Con last year, and in 2011, he was in 2011 he was doing really well, but last year apparently he was really, really sick. He co-created the character of Swamp Thing with Len Wein was the writer, and Bernie was the artist. And his artwork on Swamp Thing was so, like, dark and, like, horrific and ghastly. It was fantastic. And eventually he would leave the book, and then Alan Moore would come in with another artist, and they would create the character of John Constantine. So we wouldn't have John Constantine if it hadn't been for the late, great Bernie Wrightson creating Swamp Thing.
Oh, his stuff was amazing, dude. I mean, for the Frankenstein stuff.
Yes, he did his Frankenstein.
And even, like, I think am I right or wrong in saying his last comic work? Granted, it wasn't the best run of the character, but during the Marvel Knights Punisher, when he was the Angel and had
was he the artist on that?
I believe he was the artist.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So say what you want about that era, not good. The art was dope.
That was before
at least.
The Welcome Back Frank.
Correct.
With Steve Dillon, who passed away last year. Right, yeah, right. I don't know of a lot of. I don't know what comic book conventions you happen to go to, Mr. Seneca. But if you ever went to any, did you ever meet Bernie Wrightson?
I did not, unfortunately. I was a frequenter of the San Diego Comic Con for about 13 years and stopped going in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
2003 to 2004, somewhere around there. And so now I'm going to Dragon Con every year. But Dragon Con doesn't really attract a lot of the same people that would go to San Diego Comic Con.
Gotcha.
Yes, San Diego Comic Con, I love to go. I would hang with the writers and artists, and it was great. And you could meet a lot of really great people. I met Alan Moore. Like,
nice.
It's fantastic. But I unfortunately did not get a chance to meet him.
Well, speaking of the father of John Constantine, Alan Moore, what can you tell us about your encounter meeting him?
Perfect.
Nothing good, apparently.
Fuck DC.
It was good. It just crosses more into, like, my personal life.
Oh. Wait, your personal life. Were you and Alan Moore a thing once upon a time?
No.
Okay.
Fascinating.
I'm like, whoa, how, this is a...
Let's go to commercial. Tell the story.
Secrets of the DC Universe revealed.
Nothing like that.
Okay.
But, maybe you get a couple drinks in me, I may tell.
Oh, my God.
I did, however, look up Astra, and she is actually Alex Logue's daughter, who is another magician. So it wasn't Constantine's sister or his daughter. It is Alex Logue's daughter, who was kind of an unwilling participant in her father's magical orgies. Yeah, and,
that's right.
So that was the person who was taken away. And
okay, the one thing I loved, there's a scene when John fights his dark self, and it reminds me of Link fighting his dark half in The Legend of Zelda. It's almost very identical.
I love the makeup job. I don't know who they did for the makeup. I'd have to look that up, but it was excellent.
Absolutely. I wrote something down here, Edgewood Ave. I don't know what that means.
Edgewood Ave, that's the, when she scries, in that example, you know, in the
oh, that's right. Okay, yeah.
Being taught how to scry, the blood from the her hand and the pendant land on Edgewood Avenue. So after the big meeting with the demon at the end of the episode, Richie Simpson drives her past Edgewood Avenue, and she sees firsthand the catastrophe that could be her life if she were to pursue this magical realm, and to just basically show her exactly how dangerous it is. And so Richie did that to dissuade her from actually following John Constantine, because as he says in this episode a number of times, everyone that joins him in these in his path ends up dying. And we see that more tangibly in the comics, because they pass on, but they're still with him. They haunt him as ghosts throughout the comics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the previous show that we did, Kindred of the Embraced, we had a bromance moment for every episode and a yum moment for every episode, which we always try to stick to. So this time around with Constantine, we're going to be still doing the yummy moment of the episode, but also doing the douchebag moment of the episode, as John Constantine is himself a douchebag. Mistress Zeneca has our yum moment for the episode, which is indicative of her
taste. Yeah, like, you know, I love zombies. You know, I love the undead. And a possessed dead person counts, I think. So the yum moment for me was the part of the episode where the possessed former neighbor of Liv drives the van, crashes into Liv's office where she should have been sitting, and when she's turns her head towards the camera and the white eyes and her neck is clearly broken, but she's just like mouthing like rah, rah, rah. To me, that's the yum moment of the episode.
Oh my
strictly
god
personal.
And then what would you say John's douchebag moment of the episode would be?
Douchebag? Well, just the fact that he used Liv as bait for that demon seal. I mean, that alone, that's a pretty douchebag move to do, considering that this demon wants her dead, and he places her inside the demon seal. When the demon arrives and walks into the seal, she doesn't immediately leave the seal. Like, she's standing there, and he could have easily just rushed over there, grabbed her, and bit her, or tore through her body so easily. Like, I understand why he was using her as bait, but it's still a pretty douchebag move to do.
Correct. I love it when John goes into the alley and like lights his arms on fire to fight the I don't know what those are, bounty hunters or just people after him. They don't look like demons. They all look like normal people that are coming after him in the episode.
Yeah, they just look like gang members. But there is a bloody head of a stag or something on the wall, which means it was magically tied, but not quite just typical gangbang activity.
And then we pull back from the fight, and we're given the artist, I think it's Zed, is like drawing John, and we also see some artwork from the comic books too. So it shows her range of talent.
Zed has some ties, right? Old school run, I believe. Zed was an old girlfriend.
Yeah, she's a long time running character in the comic books.
Yeah.
Kind of like Papa Midnight, who pops up in only three episodes of this season. I'm sure he probably would have popped up in more if they had continued. Because I guess he's like, when we get to him, when we get more about Papa Midnight, he's basically John's, you know, Joker, his Lex Luthor, his number one enemy. Now, Mr. Zeneca, because that's pretty much it for the episode, but we also, all three of us, had a chance to watch Justice League Dark. Did you have a chance to see it, Mr. Zeneca?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Oh, no. Justice League Dark, for anyone not familiar with it, is the team that John joins in the New 52 after it's launched, which consisted of like Shade the Changing Man, Zatanna, Madame Xanadu, the Enchantress, the same Enchantress from the Suicide Squad movie, and the team that's in the, and Deadman too. And the team that's in the animated series is Swamp Thing, Zatanna, Etrick and the Demon, and Deadman. And probably the reason why they didn't put Enchantress in there is because of the fact she was in the Suicide Squad movie. The Enchantress, by the way, in the comics always looks like a Halloween costume Salem witch.
Yeah,
a green costume.
Yeah.
But in like the Suicide Squad movie, they turned her into this like swamp witch. She looks like the mummy from the upcoming Tom Cruise movie.
Or like an Asian, you know, I feel she should be coming out of a well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Very Ringu-like.
And of course, also, just because they needed to sell the animated movie, Batman is in the front of the cover art, which is really stupid and not necessarily needed. But when you watch the animated movie, though, John is the main character in this. He is the focal point in this whole entire thing.
As they say, we need a leader for the team.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's really, even though, again, they needed to sell this or whatever and market it, they needed to put Batman on the cover.
Correct.
But you watch this, and Batman is not as big of a character as John Constantine is.
I like him just playing kind of the straight man and being like openly frustrated at times. Like he'd always have that whenever magic, you know, machinations is running amok and he's just pissed. Like, like he's just annoyed to be there.
Did you happen to read the Injustice Gods Among Us comic book series?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I adored that series, oddly enough.
In year three, John shows up with the magic users to fight Superman and his Justice League.
Yeah.
It's at one point they find out that the Spectre's host is in Arkham, and the Spectre has been in disguise this whole time as Mitzel Pitlick because he loves the fact that Superman is finally just going all out crazy with his power. And he ends up fighting Trigun. Like, you know, something that they said like has never happened in the comics. You have two huge magic users fighting each other. Mitzel Pitlick, whatever his name is.
It's hard. I always thought it was Mixelplick from Super Friends.
Yeah.
And then they later started pronouncing it Mixelpitlix.
Yeah.
I don't think you're wrong either way.
No.
I like Mixelplick, but, you know, whatever, you know.
You know who we're talking about, correct, Mr. Zeneca?
Yes.
Mitzelpitlick fights Trigun, and that's never happened in the comic. Trigun is Raven's father.
Yeah.
excuse me. They're fighting each other, and John locks Batman's team of good Justice Leaguers and Superman's renegade Justice Leaguers into the House of Mysteries and the House of Secrets. Which I didn't realize were two separate houses.
I had a conversation with my buddy Matt the other day. I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah, and I realized there was two. I think they both had their own series, right?
Correct, but I think they were anthology series, right?
I thought so. Kind of, and they had their own, like, didn't like Cain and Abel from the Vertigo kind of host one?
Yeah. Dreaming,
yes.
The Dreaming.
You're right, Mr. Zeneca. Yeah. Not to be confused with Kane, the vampire, who would come on later on in his own series, I, Vampire.
Correct.
Which was fantastic.
Yep.
Did you ever read that?
I didn't read that. I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it.
Zeneca, did you ever read I, Vampire?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it's so good.
I have not read that one.
Yeah.
I was actually more of a fan of like the Dreaming series itself. Anything that really Vertigo put out at that period of time, you know, late, I would say mid-90s through early 2000s, I read, and then like the Sandman series I read.
Yep.
This I, Vampire, was one of like the books launched in 2011 when New 52 launched. It was one of the 52 titles launched. It was great. It was so good. It was very Vertigo-ish.
Okay.
Again, they wanted all the characters to play together in the same universe, and it crossed over with Justice League Dark, and John showed up in it like one other time without the Justice League Dark, but it was canceled after 19 issues, and that was in 2012, and they haven't done anything with that character. Yeah, that character. But his name, his character, I'm sorry. His name is not – it's Andrew Bennett is the I, Vampire.
Yep.
Kane is the name of the first vampire who takes over Andrew's body at some point.
Okay.
And the Justice League Dark team up with Andrew to stop Kane's like reign of vampirism upon the DC Universe.
Gotcha.
But they just – they haven't done anything with him since 2012 since they canceled that title.
I believe that character goes back even farther. I have an old Who's Who. Remember the old Who's Who?
He appeared in House of Mystery. That's where his first appearance is. But again, that's when House of Mystery, again, was like an anthology book.
Yeah.
It wasn't – but Mr. Zeneca said like it was hosted by Cain and Abel.
Yeah.
excuse me. Go ahead.
I was going to say the character Zed that's actually at the very end of the episode – you know, Zed, you know, pops up now and then as this on and off girlfriend to Constantine in the comics, but her appearance here in the television show is quite interesting because the backstory of Zed herself is that she was basically in the original Sin trade paperback mm-hmm. series that she was part of the Resurrection Crusade.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so she was supposed to be the person that was going to bring a new Messiah into the world, and she was called the New Maria.
Okay.
And John Constantine is the one that deflowers her and basically makes her tainted with demon blood because he was healed by a demon in order to, you know, stop the Resurrection Crusade and the Damnation Army. So he was the one that actually put a wrench in all of that and took her off of the market from her destiny as far as the Resurrection Crusade was concerned.
Okay, so let me try and figure this out. So he, John Constantine, an exorcist, deflowers this woman and somehow gives her demon stuff inside her when he,
Alright. So what happens is...
I'm trying to figure out how this, you know, the birds and the bees in John Constantine's universe works.
Are basically pestering him, and he ends up walking out of the train, a moving train, and damaging his body quite severely. As he wakes up, a demon, you know, licks him awake, I guess you could say that. You know, he wakes up and his tongue is right in his face, and he makes a deal with the demon that he was going to go after the Resurrection Crusade, but in exchange, he wanted his body healed. And the only way that the demon thought to do that was to put some of his own blood in John's IV. And so he heals rapidly, and then he gets sent on this mission. He goes and finds Zed, and he can't kill her. You know, the demon wants her dead, but he can't kill her. But instead, he ends up laying with her in this hollowed-out tree and basically has sex with her, and therefore defiling this pure woman that was supposed to receive angel seed to create the new Messiah. And since a demon's blood had come in contact with John and it was flowing through his veins, so therefore his own seed was demon tainted.
Nice.
And so then that makes her tainted, and she can no longer receive the angel seed.
Ah, okay. There's a lot of seed spreading going on here.
It is a good segue. Just John has a history of intimate encounters changing destiny, because he was also the living embodiment that Alec Holland somehow entered his mind, and he was the facilitator of Abby Arcane and Swamp Thing's child.
Yes, that's what, I remember that. That's what makes Swamp Thing and John like brothers almost.
Yeah, or kind of like a uncle or stepfather.
Yeah, because he used his body to fuck his wife to have a kid.
To teeth.
Surrogate.
Yes, exactly. Surrogate.
Thank you, that's the word, surrogate. But I like how the scene where, let's say he's still in character when the spell wears off, and then Abby's like, oh, John, like she kind of like went along for the ride after the consciousness. It was funny to me. I'm 13.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I just said it was funny to me.
And we'll get more into Zed's character in The Darkness Beneath, which is which we will be talking about in 2 weeks. I love the fact, by the way, that episode aired on Halloween in 2014. This was the what was that, Mr. Zeneca?
It's actually a really good episode too.
Yeah. I can't wait to get to it. That's more of the. That episode is more of like the straight-up type of Vertigo-style Hellblazer storytelling that the series would continue onward with. But again, unfortunately, was just not enough to keep it going in the ratings for NBC, which it should never been on the air with, kind of like Supergirl was on CBS. And then, like, it should have been on the CW to begin with, you know?
It didn't make any sense.
No, it really didn't. But we'll get into all that stuff later on. Michael, while we still have you here in the studio, is there anything else you'd like to share with us, that some tidbits of information about John Constantine before we let you go?
You know what? I think John's having, like, a weird, you know, let's face it. the movie wasn't good, right? let's say it. John is blonde and British, first of all. But a lot of folks, like a lot of normies, talking to, you mentioned this name, they're like, oh, the Keanu Reeves movie. And you're like, well, no. And at least now we had the first season of the TV show, something. His appearance in Justice League Dark. So I think, while I'm not saying that John's becoming, you know, by no means a Deadpool or Harley Quinn character, I think he's finally starting to attract this level of interest from non-comic book folks. Like, his name is out there. So I'm really curious to see, you know, after his appearance on JL Dark, you know, I think we're very close to getting that definitive Constantine either film or show.
But they just said that the CW is not going to do that.
Well, you know, like, how many Spider-Mans have we had in the last couple of years? Maybe not this year, maybe like down the line. I just want, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think we could see John somewhere, maybe in the DC Cinematic Universe, or...
Well, they did say he's going to get his animated series on Seed. It's going to be made by the same production team that did the Vixen animated series,
cool.
Which is on Seed right now. It's the same animation style as the Justice League Dark.
Cool. It's great animation. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend, you know, first Constantine, read Dangerous Habits. That's what the film was inspired by. Let's just say at the end he doesn't chew gum. and check out the Garth Ennis Steve Dillon run. They had a great run, made John more of a street wise mage. It was just a very more street level interpretation of the character. If you liked what this creative team did with Preacher, you would adore this run. I got to read Preacher new issues coming out while diving into the back issues of the Ennis Dillon run. So it was, you know, great. Two great characters. That's probably why I started smoking. I was very impressionable at 20 years old. But no, don't smoke. But no, check out the Garth Ennis Steve Dillon run. Jump in there.
By the way, I don't know if you caught it or not, Mr. Seneca, in this episode, but does John smoke at all in the episode?
He does not.
Okay. Now, does he ever have a cigarette in his hand?
No.
Okay. So here's the thing. NBC, when the show was launched, all the fans' biggest question was, is he going to smoke?
Right.
And NBC said no, because we do not advocate smoking on any of our programs anymore, even with the villains, because of the fact we just don't support smoking at all. Right. Alcohol, they'll support. Drugs.
Right. Sex,
you
violence.
Know, sex, violence. Sure. All that stuff is great. But they will not promote smoking in any capacity on their shows. However, to appease the fans, like, ah, you know, all the cries and groans that came out, NBC says John will have cigarettes in his hand. They will be cutting away when he goes to start smoking. Yeah. He will have a lit cigarette in his hand. He will be throwing a cigarette out, so it'll always be like a transition from when he was smoking to when he wasn't smoking, with not actually seeing him puffing on a cigarette. Yeah. Matt Ryan was completely for that, as he didn't want to unfortunately pick up secondhand smoking. Which I don't know how long that takes to really acquire with cancer and stuff. I'm not going to get into that conversation. But Paul was Matt. Damn it. Ryan was very advocate about not wanting to smoke, but he was willing to do the subtle gestures to show it looked like he had been smoking.
For all those people out there listening that aren't familiar with John Constantine as a character, I just want to paint you a little bit of a picture of why this character is a really good character for today's modern culture. John knows a lot more about the world around him than everyone else around him.
He's very worldly traveled.
That causes a level of futility to anything that he does, because he knows that no matter what he does, there, he will always have that, you know, once death finds him, there's a few choices for him. And that level of despair and that regret, loneliness, really weighs very deeply on John Constantine as a character. Everything he does is basically painted from that reluctant hero. He's only trying to help. Everyone he helps, it always gets ruined. And I think a lot of people now, in today's political climate especially, have that level of regret and despair. You know, and that makes you sympathize with the character and also reflect on your own life. This, you know, just like everything you do just goes to shit, and frustration. And is, in the beginning of the episode, he's been in that asylum for 3 months and voluntarily, according to the voiceover, is getting this electroshock therapy. and because he's wanting to forget. And so in this case, it would be like ignorance is bliss. And so with Liv giving up the pendant, you know, she chose ignorance. And John must walk the path of non-ignorance and must face all these demons, all these haunts, everything that's around him. And he trudges through this. He trudges through this magical ability. And we hadn't even talked about John's actual magical abilities. Like, John's real ability is the ability to ride the waves of synchronicity. So where he needs to go, he will find himself. He uses a bit of subtle magic, card tricks even. He gets personal effects from people without them really realizing they're giving it to him. He has a very subtle type of magic, a type of magic that you could actually see in today's world for if you were so magically inclined to kind of see the signs here and there. And I think that this is why John Constantine as a character himself has gotten a rise in popularity.
And I don't think anyone could have probably played him any differently than the way Matt Ryan did. He was 32 years old at the time when he was cast as Constantine, and he was about 32 when they started filming as well. So he's only a year younger than me. He was born in 1981. But just absolute amazing casting for this character. And again, I'm not a super huge fan of this character as like Mr. Zeneca or Michael are. And I've read sporadic appearances here and there, and only read the first couple of trade paperbacks. But from like everything that I know about the character, this was a spot on casting job. And I'm so glad that he's able to at least continue it in the Seed show, which will be out in 2018, and then also on. I'm correcting myself, he does not play John on Justice League Action. I don't know who plays John on Justice League Action, and I'll have that information in a later episode. But the Justice League Action animated series, the character does appear in, and he is his typical, like, magic-using, smart-alecky, you know, like, oh, we have to call on John Constantine to deal with this type of thing. You know, he's got his type of, like, very womanizing, flirtatious ways with, like, the characters in any capacity. You know, like Wonder Woman or Zatanna, who are also on the show. So
smarmy, kind of sleazy a little bit.
Exactly. What's funny is I cosplay a lot as Castiel, the angel from Supernatural, and I have people come to me, are you John Constantine? I'm like, I'm not smoking, I'm not British, and I'm not blonde. I am not John Constantine. And they're like, okay. I'm like, well, get the fucking character. I'm like, I don't look like John Constantine. At least if they say Fox Mulder, I'm okay.
There you go.
I don't nearly flip out as much. And you can buy all the Hellblazer graphic novels at your local comic book store. They're all collected in like 15 volumes, contains the entire original Vertigo series, and then the original, the first New 52 Constantine series is collected. Then there's Constantine the Hellblazer, which was the second one before Constantine Rebirth. Just so it's all like completely, you know, at least they change the titles up for people. Unlike Superman and Batman and all the characters of Rebirth have basically the same freaking titles, or like Detective Comics Restarted. At least they did. At least they're calling it Detective Comics Volume 1. You open it up and you're finding out, oh, it's issue 947 because they went back to original numbering.
Correct.
At least these Constantine collections are Hellblazer, the Vertigo line. Constantine, the New 52. Constantine, the Hellblazer. And now Constantine Rebirth is the current one. So that way you're clear and understanding. Michael and I's local comic book store happens to be That's Entertainment in Worcester, Massachusetts, which you can go to. You can also go out to several other great stores like the Hall of Comics out in Southborough, or Bedrock Comics out in Framingham, or Harrison Comics out in Salem, Massachusetts, if you want a little magic in your life and you want to explore some of the things that John Constantine happens to do. I wouldn't recommend trying to summon a demon or banishing a demon, but if you happen to be in Salem wanting to do something that fucking stupid, stop by Harrison Comics while you're picking up your black cat bones and witch's magic and things of that nature. Just ask a local witch for help if you're battling a demon or something. Maybe they can put you into the direct path of an exorcism. Yes, sorry.
You are in Salem, Massachusetts, and you're wanting to speak to an actual expert in the magical arts.
Yes.
go see Lori Cabot. She's the official witch of Salem.
Oh, yes.
A wonderful lady, and she knows everything under the sun. She could probably even tell you all the symbols that John Constantine used on that roof in the Enochian language. She is an excellent resource. So see Lori Cabot. She has a store in Salem, Massachusetts. Excellent woman. I totally love her.
Do you know her personally?
No, I do not.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, maybe you can get her to come on the show.
Yeah. No, I grew up basically admiring her work.
Oh, okay.
And that's a huge influence on my life.
Oh, okay. Well, what's funny is that both my podcasts are going to be tied directly to each other in some way as we cover Constantine for the next 12 episodes, which are going to deal a lot with exorcism and demons and, like, mystical magic and lore. Mr. Zenica and I will look up what, like, this means on the show. Does it have any type of real-life meaning?
Cool.
Not just talking about the comic books. So we can, like, go, ooh, he happens to mention this thing. Well, let's Google what this thing means. Oh, it does exist in the real world. Over in my other podcast, Supernatural Creatures and Lore, we're going to have an occult demonologist expert joining the podcast every week to talk about, like, the real-life stuff regarding the television series Supernatural and what Sam and Dean Winchester are doing.
Cool.
And we're going to be doing, like, a poltergeist episode coming up and something about, like, bugs and supernatural lore and, like, the Hookman legend, urban legend as well, and many, many more weird mumbo spooky things that happen in reality, as I like to call it. I'm using quotations.
Nice. Air quotes.
Air quotes for reality. But Mr. Zenica and I, again, will do our best to talk about the real-life implications of the stuff that John happens to be using in regards to this TV series, which we will be covering for the next 12 weeks. Michael, why don't you tell the people about where they can find Trick or Treat Radio once again?
Well, once again, you can find Trick or Treat Radio on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, trickortreatradio.com. We are also the flagship of the Grand Guignol Network. Some shows under our umbrella are Unchained, which is probably the sleaziest podcast about horror movies, movies in general, video games, toys, the Outside the Corner podcast. Which picture? Fantasy baseball discussions mixed with The Onion. So a lot of, like, fake news and made up storylines about players. The Throwdown Thursday podcast every week. It drops on Thursday. Spoiler alert. And they dissect various characters. And the Elm Street Kids Movie Club, which picture a dysfunctional relationship discussing movies and whatnot and a lot of fights between a man and a woman. So it's kind of like being at home. No, but Trick or Treat Radio is the world's most dangerous talk show host. And we are on iTunes, Stitcher, and check us out.
And one of the top 25 horror podcasts, according to Rue Morgue magazine recently.
Hey, that was kind of dope, man. Yeah, that was pretty cool. It was good to get some press. So it's fun. You know, we're a bunch of assholes. We just want to be your assholes. So if you like, dudes talking about pop culture, getting into fights and the F word, we might be in your wheelhouse.
And in when this episode airs on the 22nd, I want to say 20 days? No, I'm not doing my math correctly.
No.
But April 8th at Beverly, Massachusetts, which happens to be right next to Salem, Massachusetts.
Ooh,
where we just mentioned.
Good segue.
I will be at the Beverly Comic Con, which was started in 2013 when we had the horrible incident with the Boston bombing. The Boston Comic Con was supposed to happen that weekend.
Yes.
And they had to cancel it because the police had put a bubble around the city. So these guys put together their own comic book convention in less than 24 hours with the artists, writers, and vendors that were trapped in the area till Monday when their flights were leaving or whatever. Oh. Or their hotels were already paid for. They couldn't get, you know what I mean, their money back. So they were kind of stuck here. You know what I mean? So these people put together a convention in less than 24 hours with the people that were stuck here, with as many artists, writers, vendors, and everyone else that they could get to come out to Beverly, Massachusetts, in this entire five-story building, which is basically like a giant art gallery amongst five stories. It's okay. A warehouse. I can't describe it any more than that, but it looks so cool. I went there last year and the year that they first did it, and it's so awesome, and I was able to get a table there. So I'll be there promoting Dracula the Graphic Novel, which is my comic book, and I will also be promoting Sunstone audiobook based on the graphic novel Sunstone, the BDSM lesbian romantic comedy.
Perfect.
So come out to the Beverly Comic Con on April 8th. Mrs. Zenica, why don't you give away your site information if you have any upcoming events?
Sure. My website, you can find me at elegantlykinky.com. And the upcoming event, which will be just a couple days after this podcast airs on Friday, March 24th, I'm doing Cherry Noir, which is my regular BDSM and swinger party at the Saints and Sinners Swingers Club here in Philadelphia. And after that is another one in June, and I'm doing a class on fisting in June. Oh my God. I'm that kind of kinky.
Now, for the test, do you have to cram the night before?
Oh! Speaking of fisting, anyone see Iron Fist over the weekend? It debuted, too. I'm waiting for the Iron Fist porno to come out. Yeah. Iron fisting.
It's a matter of time. Sweet Christmas.
We'll get to it later, but there is porno that features Zatanna and John Constantine.
There is? We should totally watch that.
Can I come back for that show?
When you find that, send me a link to watch it for the podcast reasons.
For reference.
References.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Zatanna in a porno. Oh, perfect. Yes, totally awesome. And then at some point, we might possibly be doing a live episode of Dead TV Podcast, but more information about that as we get closer to that date. But that's all I'm going to say about that for now. Again, thank you, Michael, for coming on the show with us to talk about Constantine.
That was awesome, guys. Thank you very much.
Yes. And thank you, Mr. Zeneca, for joining me once again. We will see you in 2 weeks for the next episode. The Darkness Beneath, which is definitely one of my favorites of the entire 13-episode run of Constantine. And don't forget, you can check us out at RadioHorror.com as well as on the Facebook page, The Dead TV Podcast. Thank you, everybody. And we'd like to say thank you to Jessel Lantern for supplying us our theme song for the Dead TV Podcast as well. And we leave you with the Dead TV Podcast theme song.